Now, President Biden released his third federal budget proposal today. It includes proposed changes to Medicare. Those changes would include raising the payroll tax for those earning $400,000 or more and expanding Medicare's ability to negotiate drug prices. In an opinion piece in Tuesday's New York Times, the president says his plan will extend Medicare's solvency for the next 25 years without cutting benefits. Republicans, they say they also have a plan to keep Medicare solvent, but without raising taxes. The partisan divide over the future of Medicare led to a contentious moment at last month's State of the Union address.
Some Republicans want Medicare and Social Security to sunset. I'm not saying it's a majority. Let me give you, anybody who doubts it, contact my office. I'll give you a copy. I'll give you a copy of the proposal.
You can join in with your thoughts and questions on the future of Medicare at 800-642-1234. Are you enrolled in Medicare yourself? Are there things that work for you? Are there things that don't? Do you have questions about what pays for Medicare and how it works? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Tom Oliver is a professor of population health sciences at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Tom, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. Good to be with you, Rob.
I want to start out talking about the basics of Medicare, Tom, because I got to admit, I've talked about Medicare and Medicaid Social Security on the air for years and years, and I still get a little confused over where they blur into each other. First of all, who uses the Medicare system?
Well, this is for folks who have paid into the Social Security system for 10 years or more. And when they reach age 65, they then become eligible for Medicare. And we can talk more about that. Then in addition to that, so that's about 55 to 60 million Americans. There's another 6 or 7 million Americans who are permanently disabled under Social Security. And they are also entitled to Medicare benefits. So we're talking about 60, 65 million Americans, and a very good chunk of both the country's population and here in Wisconsin as well.
Well, let's get into the ABCs of Medicare, or maybe the ABDs. There's Medicare Part A, B, and D that people may hear about. What are those different components of the system?
Well, it might be best to back up as to, is this actually a conversation about Medicare or not? Because honestly, this is all part of President Biden's budget proposals, and he's going to have to work out with the Congress how we pay our bills over the next few years. And so largely, this is not about Medicare at all. It's just part of a bigger fight and a bigger political process over federal budgeting and reduction of the federal debt. And then on the other hand, there are these proposals are, I think, a preemptive move by the president to modify Medicare, but in a particular way that's seen as protecting its long-term future as well as protecting current beneficiaries. And so just a very, big picture is what happened. Well, in the last 20-some years, we've had two major income tax cuts in the early 2000s and then again in 2017. And then we had two really economic disasters, the Great Recession in 2008, 2009, and then the COVID-19 pandemic. And so that really increased government spending at the same time certain kinds of revenues went down. So part of it is like, why do we even have these big budget deficits? Now, because we're fighting inflation, and we have higher interest rates, everything the government pays for, whether it's healthcare or defense or crop subsidies or highway construction or anything else, it's going to cost the government more in interest payments. And so we'd rather pay for real things than paying interest, obviously. The other big thing that is specific about Medicare is there's a much a larger growing population, as you mentioned, of older Americans eligible for Social Security and Medicare. And depending on our immigration policies, fewer working age Americans paying into the Social Security and Medicare programs. And then finally, one last thing, healthcare almost always goes up faster in terms of its prices and payments, whether by government or private employers or individuals, than income and prices for other goods and services. So this is a healthcare discussion. It's a Medicare discussion, but it's also about our general society and our general economic situation.
Sure. Keying in on Medicare. So 2028 is a year that gets talked about a lot, a point where I believe it's the Medicare Part A system won't be paying for itself in some ways. It doesn't mean Medicare collapses at that point, but why are we focused in on this 2028 concept, Tom?
Well, way back in 1965, President Johnson and the Democrats who pushed through Medicare at the time, they were focused only on hospital insurance, which was the most expensive part of healthcare for people. And so they created Part A of Medicare, and it was funded through a trust fund that the payroll taxes that we pay, those of us who have hourly wages or a salary, that is a small chunk of that goes into Social Security and Medicare while we're working, and then we get Medicare later on when we retire. So that is a trust fund that comes and goes and is dependent on certain kinds of income, whereas the rest of Medicare is paid for by different kinds of taxes, income taxes and some others, as well as contributions in the form of premiums, deductibles and coinsurance from beneficiaries receiving the services.
Talking to Tom Oliver from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at the future of Medicare and how we pay for it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Steve is with us in Ashland. Steve, hi.
Hi. I'm paying about $750 a month for a life-saving medication, and Medicare pays for about $2,400 a month for that same medication. I think it costs AbbVie Pharmaceutical about $100 a month to make that drug. I'm wondering why we're still not negotiating, why Medicare is still not negotiating with the pharmaceutical industry on medication prices.
Steve, thanks for the call. This is part of the president's proposal. There are some drugs now that Medicare can negotiate in some ways on. The president wants to add to that. Can you talk about that piece of the puzzle, Tom?
Yes, I am very hopeful that you will see a better situation quite soon. Going back to last year in the Inflation Reduction Act, that began to allow Medicare for the very first time ever to start negotiating prescription drug prices. And remember, Medicare doesn't actually pay directly for prescription drugs because of this, Rob, you referred to this Part D. Mm-hmm. There's these private prescription drug coverage plans that Medicare beneficiaries have to sign up for. So it is the beginning of the really high cost drugs. It sounds like yours ought to be one of those, but apparently it is not yet. But this new proposal by the president would expand Medicare's negotiating powers to many more drugs and take us from a handful of overvalued drugs that are very obvious to a broader class of drugs that are still super costly to those of you who need to take those particular medications. So I'm hopeful we will see this begin as Medicare has in many other areas, payments to physicians, payments to hospitals, to step into the game slowly, but then aggressively move over the years to make this a much more systematic part of something that would be really important to many Americans.
Steve, thanks for sharing your experience. Now, Tom, critics of this negotiation idea, and I'm thinking of there's an editorial in the Wall Street Journal, for example, have made the case with these negotiations, with lowering reimbursements or compensation for the production of these medications, it's a disincentive to research a new drug, to produce a new drug, to make it available to the market. If a company looks at the bottom line and says, well, we're going to make less money down the road because of this change, maybe we shouldn't develop this drug in the first place. Do you worry about that disincentive effect?
Undoubtedly, there would be some disincentive. That's objectively true. But how much of a disincentive? There are still lengthy patent protections for true breakthrough drugs. You can still have plenty of what we call the blockbusters to come along. And so I think it's really a distraction when the industry says that we're going to lose all new research and development and new innovation, because there's plenty of economic incentive and financial interest in developing new, more profitable medications that affect a lot of people. And so I worry more about incentives for researching drugs that affect very few people and so-called orphan drugs in terms of these kinds of problems. And the honest truth is drug companies don't put that much into research and development compared to lots of other costs that they incur and sources of profits.
Talking to Tom Oliver, professor of population health sciences at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at Medicare. The president has some suggested changes in his budget. Congressional Republicans talking as well. And you can, too, at 800-642-1234. Are there changes you'd like to see in Medicare? Do you rely on it yourself? What works for you? What doesn't? If you are a healthcare provider, do you have thoughts on the Medicare system? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Tom Oliver, professor of population health sciences at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, taking a look at the future of Medicare. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your experiences, your questions for our guest. That's 800-642-1234. Go back to your calls now. Nancy is with us in Milwaukee. Nancy, hi.
Hello. I have belonged to a Medicare Advantage plan for many years, but there were many years when I was younger that I hardly ever saw the doctor, and yet my insurance company was being paid a very large sum of money every month for my care. But as I said, I was in very good health and didn't need to see a doctor. But now that I'm older, I'm going to be charged $1,000 as a copay for a drug for advanced osteoporosis. And I resent the fact that now I'm paying this very large copay when the insurance company got the benefit of this number of dollars, which I think was over $500 per month for my care. And yet I'm being treated now as paying a copay that a patient would pay who had to go to a doctor maybe more than once a month every single year.
Nancy, thanks for the call. Tom, Medicare Advantage, it's a different kind of animal. Can you tell us what that is and if Nancy's situation is common?
Yes. Well, this was introduced several decades ago and evolved over time. But basically, it tries to combine all the different parts of Medicare, the hospital care, the physicians and home care, and also prescription drugs all into one package. And it's attractive to a lot of folks who have been part of a private health plan through their employer or some other source through their working lives. The challenge here is that each of these plans has its own different rules internally for how much they're going to cover different elements of this. Again, there's a little bit of hope in the Inflation Reduction Act in 2022, and now moving forward to try to stop people like Nancy from having to pay more than a certain amount for deductibles toward any particular drug. And again, $1,000 for a single medication, well, that's something that, you know, should cover most of your prescriptions for all of them for the whole year. And the idea that this is something you're subject to year after year after year is also really difficult for folks who don't have, you know, unlimited income, right? So this is a big challenge for Medicare to start looking across the board at all these drug plans and try to start setting some tighter rules that protect folks. So while some protections are underway and have already been enacted, there's got to be obviously more and much more setting sights on particular drugs that are really seemingly very much out of line in terms of their pricing, like insulin and other things. Yes, we've made some progress. We have a lot more to go.
Nancy, thanks a lot for that call. I want to check out, Tom, some of the specific proposals that people are bouncing around aimed at the long-term funding of Medicare. Now, President Biden, we mentioned the drug negotiations. He also said, okay, let's bump up the Medicare payroll tax for people making over $400,000 a year. I think it's by 1.2%. Those two together, he says, add another 25 years to the healthy financial life of Medicare. What do you think of that part of the president's budget?
Well, the intent, obviously, because we talked about this almost artificial thing that people call bankruptcy if we empty the hospital insurance trust fund, people get very fixated on how many years left, you know, their given rates. It's a very clever way to take the new money from taxes on much higher income Americans and also some additional savings from prescription drug cost reductions, funnel that all into the hospital insurance trust fund, and that would get us 25 or more years based on current projections. Again, it's unfortunate that Medicare is so fragmented. It's not a single coherent health plan, and it's got lots of gaps. And I think, honestly, when I teach my students and talk to regular people, they don't even understand how much money Medicare beneficiaries have to pay out of their own pocket simply to cover all the things that Medicare doesn't cover, even as expensive as it is to taxpayers and the federal government.
And then the Republican House Study Committee a couple months back floated the idea of boosting the minimum age for Medicare recipients for future recipients now from 65 to 67. What would you see the impact of that being?
Well, what they're trying to do is say, hey, on average, until COVID and opioids came along in America, we had continued to see longer life spans on average across the board. So we've done this with Social Security, where we're on our way to having age 67 be the start of Social Security benefits for folks. Why not Medicare? Well, the answer is that we have different kinds of jobs, I think. And if you are, in construction or working, in agriculture or a whole host of very difficult jobs where you're on your feet or lifting or things, bodies break down. Different folks have mental illness challenges. It is not really just something you can automatically say, hey, just two more years, everybody can be fine. The other reality check is if you increased that, Medicare wouldn't save very much money. Those 2 years, as Nancy pointed out, are kind of the cheap years for Medicare, where people are still pretty healthy and not using that much health care. So if you want to do something about it, you'd have to deal with people who are over 80 or 85 years old. That's where a lot of the costs for Medicare are end of life, so to speak, in our last year of life, when a lot of things are breaking down and we have all kinds of high technology and lots of different people trying to take care of us and keep us alive for, relatively short periods of time.
Let's go back to our callers now. We've got Phyllis in Madison. Phyllis, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about?
I'm wondering how the negotiating for drug prices by Medicare will affect the pharmacy benefit managers.
Phyllis, thanks for the call. Tom, a whole nother part of our healthcare payment system, the people, the companies that manage our pharmacy benefits, are they impacted as you see it by the Medicare prescription drug negotiation power?
Well, this just goes back this 1 year. Basically, if you look at the history of Medicare, a whole system has to be built and put in place. It's going to have to deal with pharmacy benefit managers and their rules and their practices, which are allowable, which are encouraged, which do they actually have to take up and start doing more strongly. And setting these much more consistent rules across all the different drug plans and applying to all the beneficiaries. So I think we've got a long ways to go in building the practices and the institutions and the rules and then actually enforcing and making sure that they're working well. But they're obviously getting a chunk of all the money are they providing the value and helping us save money for those of us actually using the drugs?
Thanks a lot for the call, Phyllis. Tom, in just our last minute or so, we've been talking about, you know, what we're hearing from Democrats and Republicans on this. What would you like to see policymakers focus on when it comes to Medicare?
Well, I think it's actually needs to be greatly improved. There's, as I said, there's many holes in it. For example, it doesn't pay anything towards long-term care for people who need that beyond a short month-long stay recovering from a hospital surgery or something else. There's a lot of other gaps that are still, there's no dental care. There's no other kinds of things that are part of the body and certainly part. And also the president is proposing mental health improvements as well. So there's a lot of things that Medicare needs to be greatly improved. And, you know, when it comes to reducing our Medicare spending, you really have simple choices. You can cut benefits, or you can cut payments to healthcare providers, or you can increase revenues from all taxpayers, some taxpayers, or from current beneficiaries. And so it's obviously politically a lot better to not make the program worse in terms of its benefits. So healthcare providers are going to have to get a little more realistic about their growth in spending and their use of technology. And we've got to get more careful about where is the healthcare money being spent and on what things are they are necessary, which ones are appropriate, which ones are really not appropriate, and try to get much more careful about that. But it's a very, very difficult process. And as you can imagine, each of us feels differently about the things that affect us personally versus everybody else.
Tom, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Tom Oliver, professor of population health sciences at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He was with us today to help us understand where the two parties would like to take Medicare into the future.